Hello and welcome to the Crisis Point Podcast. I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Just want to remind people to subscribe and like the channel, this podcast, review it, rate it, all that stuff I say every time. You know what to do, so do it. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about the a great new product. It's a liturgical calendar. We're going to talk a lot more than just about the liturgical calendar, but basically living the Catholic faith in your family. I think that's really probably the main subject we're talking about today. And we have Jeremiah and Michaela Harrison with us today. They're Benedictine Oblates, parents of five. They run Liturgy of the Home with a mission to support Catholics in celebrating the liturgical year of the church all year round. They produce the Illustrated Liturgical Year Calendar, which is published by Sophia Institute Press, which we'll definitely be talking about. But welcome to the program, guys.
Thank you for having us here.
Hello.
Yeah, great. So first, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? Just, you know, are you cradle Catholics? Are you converts? How, you know, just some basics about who you are.
Let you go first.
Okay. I'm a cradle Catholic. I'm the oldest of seven. Grew up mostly in Southern California, but my family moved out to Oklahoma when I was 21. And we moved out near a Benedictine Abbey called Clear Creek. We live a few miles away. And both my parents are also cradle Catholics. So growing up, the Catholic faith was just very much a part of our daily lives. But my mom did struggle on how to do the cultural aspects.
Ago did you say you moved next to Clear Creek, the Benedictine Abbey?
It's been almost 16 years that we've lived out here. So,
okay.
Yeah.
2006, right?
I'm not remembering which year it was, but yes, it's been a while. If we go to California, people say we have an Oklahoma accent, but people out here in Oklahoma say we still have a little bit of a California accent. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of stuck right in the middle.
Very good.
And me, I'm from Texas originally. I came out in 2009. I actually met her out here. Our whole relationship, dating and marriage began out here, but I'm a convert. So I did not grow up with the faith. I'm the only one in my family who's converted. I converted when I was 22 years old, and I read my way into the faith. But two things that really got me in is when I discovered the doctrine of the Eucharist and this whole aspect of the authority of the church, the authority of the papacy. Those two things did it for me. There's a whole story there. And then I came out to the monastery just to visit years ago, kind of like a tumbleweed trying to figure out what I want to do with myself. And the Lord saw fit to let me get stuck and put down roots.
Very good. I have a very similar story. Yours. I converted when I was 22. I was Protestant, read my way, a lot of the same things. And I married a cradle Catholic. And I think one of the big things for me, this is, of course, a long time ago, but when I was first married, I didn't know how to be a Catholic parent, obviously, because I had never seen a Catholic parent, you know, because my parents weren't Catholic. Yet, actually, right before marriage, I actually had the joy of living with a Catholic family. Of a good friend of mine, I lived with his parents for about a month, and just that 1 month was hugely educational to me. I think it was like even October. It wasn't like some great liturgical year or something, but it just really showed me the Catholic culture of the family, and it was a great benefit. Now, of course, my wife had the Catholic culture growing up. Of course, she grew up in the 70s, so how much Catholic culture there was back then, I'm not 100% sure. But her parents actually did a good job, and so. But it's what we're talking about today, and I think it's an interesting thing for families, and I know converts particularly, we don't know how to do this stuff, and unfortunately, a lot of cradle Catholics don't, because like they grew up in the 70s, 80s, something like that. And we'll talk about that more in a minute. But I really want to ask you, though, about, so you live next to a Benedictine Abbey. It's called an Abbey, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Benedictine Abbey. And you're Benedictine Oblates. Now, people, I know people have no idea, a lot of people have no idea what that means. So why don't you explain exactly what it means to be a Benedictine Oblate?
I think it's, I mean, you could think of it, people familiar with like Franciscans, tertiaries, the third order Franciscans, it's similar to that. An oblate, a Benedictine oblate makes promises, and we're still in the world. So many times oblates can come from all walks of life, even like, Blessed Karl of Austria, he was an oblate with his wife, Imprezita. So you make a promise, you sort of promise stability to a particular monastery. And then part of the commitment is to read the rule of Saint Benedict and to perform at least one of the offices each day. But there's, as an oblate, we're sort of like we're like extended family. So the monks pray for us in the offices, you know, at the very end of the office, they pray for all of their absent brethren. That's including the oblates and all of their family. So it's a way to integrate Benedictine spirituality in the home. It's a way for those of us who can't be full-time monks to be
still benefit from
not the part-time monks, but
yeah, it's a lot of spiritual benefits.
Do you have to live near an abbey to do this?
You don't have to. It helps, though, I think, especially if you really want to integrate that life into your family life.
Okay. And can you go to the monastery and participate in anything that a non-oblate could not participate in? Or
yeah, the availability is open for oblates still. So like as a man, I can go to all the offices. I can take a meal with the monks. So like she's a woman, so she's still only able to go to what all women are able to go to within the monastery. So
there is a guest house that's run by a really lovely lady. And so I'll make retreats there. The prior there is our spiritual director. Once a year, there's an oblate day. So oblates come from all over the place to have a day of retreat and hear spiritual talks. And it's a lovely day. So some of us get to live really close and some live farther away, but we're all spiritually united in reading the rule, trying to conform our lives as much as we can to the rule of Saint Benedict. And then doing as many of the offices as our lives permit us to do. And that's sort of the idea behind
it. The graces are real, though. There really is a charism to Benedictine spirituality, and there's a peace and stability. And as oblates, if you really enter into that, we've felt it in our family life over the last few years. It's brought a lot of stability.
They say that, you know, each of the religious orders has a different charism. But if you look at what is special to the Benedictine charism, it's really the upholding of the liturgy. And so us doing these liturgical calendars is sort of our little part to play, you could say.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In that. Right. Very good. I think there'll be a lot of people watching or listening to this who are thinking about now moving.
Well, hey, you know what? I love this community. There's a whole, you know, group of families that have sprung up around the Abbey. They've been coming from all over.
Yes.
And I want to see our little community grow. I'd love to see a village come out here. I mean, if you look at how Christendom was built in the Middle Ages, you had Saint Benedict who left the cities and he went out to the country and he founded a house. And then basically those monasteries are now the cities of Europe. He built the culture of Europe. And I do believe, you know, I'm sure a lot of your readers are familiar with Rod Dreher's The Benedict Option. And there's been a lot of discussion about the Benedict Option. I do believe that needs to play a role because we have to rebuild Christian culture. But I kind of think you need to, wherever you are, not everybody needs to move next to the Abbey, but some should. And we'd love to have them. We did. And many need to
you're
stay.
Literally living the Benedict Option in the most literal way possible. So very good. Yeah. I mean, that sounds exciting. I'm going to link to the Abbey I assume the Abbey has a website somehow.
Yes.
I'll link to that in the show notes as well. So people can find out about that, support the Abbey, pray for them and everything like that. Cause it sounds like I've heard, of course, the Clear Creek Abbey for a long time and I've heard great things about it. So, I mean, that's great to talk to somebody who's actually living there and says it is great, as people say it is. So that's good. Now, you all founded Liturgy of the Home. Why don't you tell us about what that is?
It is a, it began with the liturgical calendars and how we can help make living the liturgy in the daily life of the home a little bit easier for mothers. We have, you know, four little ones and a little one in the oven. And I know how hard it is for mothers to try in the chaos of life, daily life, to try to make the liturgy present to children, especially young children. And these calendars, with very little input from the mother, give the children something to look at and ask questions about. I'm really big on children initiated items in the home, things that perk their curiosity. And so the calendars for our family has really been that. And I've heard from others that the calendars do the same for their children. And there's a lot to look at and a lot to discover. So,
and about the, you know, the company we formed, the Liturgy of the Home, it really has sprung out of this need that we have ourselves and that we perceive all around. How do we better celebrate the liturgy? You know, the monks do it beautifully. They have all the time in the world to dedicate to it, but us in the ordinary world, it's much a struggle. You know, when you have a 4 or 5 kids, don't really sit as still as monks do in their choir stalls. And so the idea came is, you know, when you look out online, there's so many different moms, you know, internet moms who have pulling together resources. There's some blogs that she loves to follow where they're pulling together recipes, or they're trying to bring back some of these traditions and stuff, but they're kind of scattered all over the place and everybody's sort of trying to pull it together as they can. The idea began to emerge, in addition to this calendar, is could we collate and bring these resources together? And my wife, who's an artist, could we make them all flow and integrate and present them so that way a mom could easily have everything she would want at her disposal mm-hmm. for every feast day. So she's not having to dig and assemble all these books from all these places. How can we bring it together and how can we magnify those old traditions? And so we're wanting to collaborate with other people too. I mean, we have the calendar, which is the first piece right now. We kind of stumbled into it and it's become so big, but yet we want to be able to pull in recipes that go with different things you'd cook throughout the year. We want to pull in hymns. I want to go to, you know, resurrect many of the old hymns that were sung at different seasons. You know, for example, we all sing Christmas carols, but there's a lot of beautiful hymns to be sung in Advent. Mm-hmm. And even I've been Catholic for over 10 years and I haven't heard hardly any of them. And so there's songs to be sung for all the different periods of the year. So we're in a process of trying to pull these things together and to present them in a membership on a platform where people could access it easily. And the hope is we're just trying to make it easier for families to pull back these traditions and relive them. And even for, you know, communities, you know, things like processions, communities organizing processions around their neighborhood, around their parish. We just want to, if there's something we can do, we want to help rehabilitate that, be part of that. And these calendars are a part of that piece. There's, you
know. Right. So before we get into like details of the calendars, which we will soon, I think I want to take one step back and just ask why should we live the liturgy in the home? By that, I mean, a lot of people, I think even a lot of Catholics would say, okay, the liturgy is something you do in church. You go to Mass and you pray and you celebrate that feast day. But why do we bring that into the home? What is the purpose of that? And how does that help the family live a more Catholic life?
Well,
why not just pray the rosary every day, I guess, is kind of one thing, you know, or something like that. Like there's other things, devotions you can do that aren't necessarily liturgical. Why specifically the liturgy, bring it into the home?
You know, I'm struck by, do you remember when the thief on the cross, and he said to our Lord, remember me when you enter your kingdom. And when you look at the liturgical year, it's a series of memorials and remembrances. And it has struck me that we're human creatures. We're not angels. And we need to embody and express these realities in multiple ways. And so the liturgical year is this sort of divine pageant, this where we remember and memorialize the saints, the different events of our Lord's life, the different events within even the history of the church. You know, there's feast days given to the dedication of certain basilicas and such. If we're really going to be Christian and make it to heaven, I think we have to be infused in those realities. And there's so much available, that so much beautiful writings of the saints, but the church has to be relevant for the most intellectual all the way down to the most simple. And I find, or at least I've, as I've read, through her liturgical year and these processions of these different celebrations, she is able to present something that engages the whole human person all year long and helps. I really, it's through the liturgical year, it's one of those primary tools that really helps us get to heaven. It's the riverbanks on our journey to heaven. And through practicing the liturgical year, even if you're not that intellectual, this is why the church has understood that to get certain points across, you make a liturgy for it. You make a feast day for it. You know, the Feast of Christ the King was instituted at a time and a place because the church understood by having that feast right there, it would do more than a, you know, a doctoral dissertation of trying to explain why something is so relevant. And so we need to be infused with Catholicism. And I think the liturgical year is one of the primary ways that is actually done. And we have to be Christians every moment of every day. And so with that, we have something to grab a hold on, something to remember.
I would add to what he's saying and say that you have to have a culture. And if you don't create a Catholic culture in your home, then the modern culture is going to seep in. And it's very opposed to the culture of the church. And children, especially growing up, build associations that go very deep to different cultures, or to different customs. So teaching the children, you know, the symbolism of the Christmas tree, why we do that, putting out the shoes for the Feast of St. Nicholas. Children remember these things. And if they only go to church and only maybe just do the rosary and there's really nothing else, it's a little more disconnected for them. And if they grow up with it, then they'll carry those memories and it will enrich their experience at the liturgy in the church if the home is reflecting that. So that's another reason.
Yeah, great. Now, so let's start talking about specifically the illustrated liturgical year calendar, which I'm very excited about. And so, okay, so first I want to say, people who are listening to this and not watching it, we will be talking about a few things that we are showing things on the screen, whatnot, not a whole bunch. We'll try to keep you up to date. But if you want to, check us on YouTube, these parts as well. First, I just want to bring one out. I have one with me here so you can see the size of it. So here's the liturgical year. I think it's like 24 by 18. I think I measured it. Okay, 24 by 18. So you see it's a sizable thing. And it's a poster basically each essentially month. I know it's not exactly by the monthly calendar, but it's basically, you see here, this one covers 4 weeks. The 4 weeks. This is the Advent one. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to pull up on the screen a little bit more closely so people can see it. And so essentially, though, you created this. This is brand new. I just got mine a couple days ago. And it starts with this first Sunday of Advent coming up here soon. We're recording this in November 2021. So let me also, I'm going to put on the screen. So that is the calendar on the screen right there. I know people might not be able to see it that great. I'm gonna highlight a part of it as well. Here's 1 week of it. So now you can see, and we'll go through some of this as well. But so that's 1 week. So before we get into some of the details, because I do think it's so impressive. I want to get into some of the details of this, because when I saw it, I've never seen a calendar like this, so detailed in this. So first, just break down why the liturgical year calendar. I know it ties into bringing the liturgy, but what made you think of like, this is the thing we want to start off with? This is what we want to be the kind of foundation of this.
You know, everybody's familiar with having a Lent calendar, or many, many people are putting a Lent calendar up as you count off the days of Lent. And when you put that calendar up, you're aware of that period. You're aware of where you are in Lent. You're aware of the different feast days and how you're getting towards the end. We've done that, but then it struck Michaela, what about the rest of the year? What about Easter? I mean, there's a whole season of Easter. You know, Easter is a week of weeks. There's 7 weeks within the Easter season, and there's certain feasts in there. And you sort of expand it, and you realize, well, the entire year has this annual cycle. And how do we make it come alive? You know, because many people have a liturgical calendar. You buy one from Sophia or Tan or whatnot, and you hang it up, and it's got this beautiful picture on the top and the white boxes on the bottom, and has the saint's feast day and such. And you write down your appointments and things. But we need something. We need objects in the home that help recollect our minds and our hearts to sacred time. And so the idea behind this is a token. This is something you hang on your wall. And because it's illustrated all at once, and because it's something that the kids can look at and notice connections and things, we're hope is that families will get this and never forget a saint's feast day again and realize. And the way we decide we want to draw, we are inspired by many of the medieval classical imagery. When you look at medieval drawings or icons and from the East, or even from, you know, there's layers of embedded imagery and symbolism. And so we wanted to create a calendar that would feature all that. That's why I remember how it came about, but it, I think it was actually, we're following an Eastern icon, Carver, who's been talking about symbolism and imagery a lot. And that's got me thinking, and the way things are framed. And then I know it struck me, all right, we need to have each of the days framed. And then we need to have imagery pertaining to that season around the days. And just, it's sort of unfolded bit by bit as we play with it. And she's the artist. She does all the drawing, but we collaborate a lot to
make sure that it's cohesive. So we call it a language. The whole liturgical year is sort of reliving the life of Christ annually, and it has a narrative, and then the saints all fall in their respective days in relationship to that narrative of Christ's life. And there's a lot of particulars that people aren't aware of, like what class feast. Some classes of feasts are higher than others, and a lot of that is lost, especially to children who don't necessarily know how to follow that. So we thought, well, how can we get more of that information using pictures rather than words, so that way kids can recognize. So once kids learn the language of these calendars, they can look at our calendar and say, oh, mama, that's a first class feast, before they're able to read. They can say, that's a second class, that's a third class.
He's a martyr. He's holding a poem in his hand with the red.
So we really try to be very consistent in how we're presenting everything, so that way it's recognizable even to very young children.
Right. Very good. And so now, for people who can't see it, this is not an appointment calendar. This is not where you're going to write, you know, what you're going to the dentist or something like that.
No,
so I just put up on the screen 1 week. This is the second Sunday of Advent. One thing I do want to say is, I don't think we've said it yet, is that this calendar is based on the 1962 traditional Catholic calendar. Yes. So for those who are wondering, that's what is being used for this, you know, which is different from the modern, the new calendar of the church. A lot of things are overlapping, but there are different, particularly saints get moved around, I've noticed, a lot more than anything else. Mm-hmm. But like your major days, like Immaculate Conception is December 8th for everybody. So that doesn't really change. Second Sunday of Advent. Mm-hmm. But if you, for those who can see, you can see what the Harrison's talking about with these different, each day has different things about symbols on it. And the nice thing is here, let me pull this up. With the calendar comes a companion guide, which I have here. Mm-hmm. And that was very nice. When I pulled that out, I thought that was really neat because it explains the meaning of the different symbolism. So, for example, it says a first-class Sunday frame. The frame expands to the top of the mantle with banner on the top, whereas a second-class Sunday frame, the frame expands to the top of the mantle with the banner on the bottom.
Yep.
So, anybody could eventually pick up, like, oh, I get that this is a second-class Sunday or a first class Sunday. And that means parents, you're going to have to learn what that means.
In the companion guide's only the beginning. We really have a guidebook because I want to be able to explain all the imagery, why we picked the particular images for the days. There's imagery in the mantle, the space above each of the days of the week. And so with basically that little pamphlet is just the beginning that gives you the overall view. If you come to our website, Liturgy of the Home, I'm almost having it up. You'll be able to access the companion guide for each day. And you could actually come and log in once a week or each day and then see a biography of the saint taken from Dom Guéranger and then some information as to why we drew what we drew. So it's meant to be the journey through the liturgical year.
It's a little more comprehensive. I can only fit so much in the pamphlet, but I wanted to at least give people something so they could begin to orient to the to the calendars.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and just kind of talk a little bit about. I'm going to pull up the 1 week, which is the second Sunday. I'm sorry, that's the wrong one. Second Sunday of Advent. And what are some of the things that I noticed? So maybe you could talk about is I noticed that, for example, Immaculate Conception, December 8th, is taller than the other days of the week. So what are we trying to say there?
So it's a first class feast, and a child or anyone could know that because the words are at the top. And also the imagery goes all the way up through that mantle. And so this is a very important,
it's a big deal.
And so is the Sunday. So all the Sundays of Advent, the banners are all at the top. But as you go, progress through the liturgical year, some Sundays are second class. And then you'll notice the other days of the week, some of the saints days, like you look at St. Nicholas, St. Ambrose, St. Damascus, they're all third class feasts. And they just that it's the sizing is fills that rectangular space. And then the other 2 days that have the scroll work on the top and bottom with excerpts from the liturgy, those are the smallest images, and those are Feria days. And the mass on those days is a repetition of the previous Sunday.
Okay, very good. And just for people who might not know, a Feria day is basically a day that is, I'm trying to think, in that's an old term, but it just basically means an ordinary day in the mm-hmm. sense that it's not a second class feast or first class feast or anything like that. Yes. Also, there's little things that you start to notice. Like, for example, in the second Sunday of Advent week, there's a little Advent a wreath in the upper left-hand corner. And I noticed that there are two of them are lit, and they're the two purple candles, because obviously yep. that's the ones you like. But I also know, okay, now this, I'm going to consider this settling the great debate among Catholics of how you go about lighting them. Cause you did two next to each other. My wife though is insistent that you do it in a sign of a cross. You do the one and you do the one across from it next. So I'm going to tell my wife that I'm sorry, but we have official confirmation that she was wrong.
Well, okay, we're only doing that, I think, because that's how the monks do it, right? That's how the monks do it.
I think that's how they do it. Although that would be very interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
Watch
question.
Them this year. See how they do it to see if which way they do. We'll take. Maybe we should take the monks as the official.
There we go. That's
yeah, we'll let them settle the debate. So, but there's things like that, so the kid can see. Okay, we have two candles lit. Also, I thought it was interesting. You have the phases of the moon mm-hmm. just embedded in there. And why did you do that? Because that seems something that doesn't seem very liturgical. So why did you do that?
Well, because I want what's going on in nature oftentimes is goes along with what's going on in the liturgy. So like right now we're in the month of November. And it's the month of All Souls, and the children can see, if they live in the Northern Hemisphere, that the leaves are falling and things are seemingly dying. And what's going on in nature helps to enter more deeply into what's going on in the liturgy. They go together. And so the moon and its phases, my hope was that children could say, oh, the moon is at this phase, and it would remind them to look up at the moon. And to connect that with what's going on in liturgical year, I'll make a little note that one of the things I'm trying to do with this calendar is in the backgrounds of various pictures, I try to reflect the shortness or the length of days. So for the Advent calendar, it's night. It's a night sky in the background. And as it comes to the Christmas season, it's like the dawn is breaking, which is, you know, they say Christ came at the darkest time of the year, and then the days began to increase, versus like John the Baptist feast is in the middle of the summer. And John the Baptist said about our Lord, you know, he must increase and I must decrease. So from the feast of John the Baptist till Christmas, the days are decreasing in length. And so, just trying to build that connection with children of the liturgical year, but also the natural world and how they fit together.
And they do connect, you know, the yeah. cycles of the moon are connected with the calculation of Easter.
Right.
So the very calculation of how the movable feasts fall, there's this connection with the cycles of our world. And then when she was mentioning the background, just to clarify, the background of the saints. So if you look at any day that's a saint's feast day and you look at the background of that saint, you'll find it to be the time of day
unless they're depicted unless there's indoors. A particular reason where it didn't make sense for it to be outdoors.
So St. Ambrose.
Okay. St. Ambrose.
Behind St. Ambrose, you can see it's the night sky.
It's that dark blue.
As we proceed through the year, the saints will be depicted gradually with the sky lightning.
So like in Epiphany time, it's like the dawn. It's like there's a little more color. And my hope is that by the time we get to John the Baptist feast, the background will be more
the day
fully
of summer.
Yeah, the exactly the brightest. And then it'll slowly coming back into the fall. It'll slowly get darker and darker. So
very good. Yeah. There's just a lot of details. And I can see a kid could just be, I mean, an adult too, but really can get mesmerized by all the different details that exist in there. It has so much different things. I mean, like for example, I'm just looking at this second week. I always pulled rolling. like the image, like above on December 9th is just a Feria day. It says, prepare you the way of the Lord. But then above that, there is a person who's standing there in a prayer position. What is that, for example?
The mantle. The above that whole wooden
right.
Thing. That's called the mantle. And that is presenting things from the liturgy that we need to reflect on during Advent. So that particular mantle is showing the three ways that we're preparing for Christ to come, not just Christ historically when he came at Bethlehem, but also preparing for Christ to enter into our hearts, particularly we think about the Eucharist, him coming to us now, and then preparing for his coming in judgment. And so the readings and liturgy are reflecting all these three different ways that Christ is coming and that we are preparing to receive him. So that image up there of the silhouette of it's taken from actually the monks here when they do their solemn profession. They extend their arms in that gesture, and they give themselves over to our Lord and promise to be amongst the rest of their life. But that gesture is very much of a receiving gesture. And then there's a little symbol in the center showing that Christ has come into his heart. Right. So that's why that's there.
Okay. Yeah. So there's just lots of stuff like that in these calendars. I mean, it's just unbelievable, all the different things. I mean, just like I said, just pulling up 1 week, you can see all this, and that's just 1 week from the calendar. Now, I noticed, like, for example, the Advent calendar, the first calendar goes from November 28th, first Sunday of Advent, all the way through the Vigil of Nativity. So December, Christmas Eve, December 24th. How in general will these calendars be broken up? Because obviously that's not exactly a month, the calendar month, but it's kind of close to, it's 4 weeks. Will they always be 4 weeks, or how do you guys plan on making the few? I haven't actually looked at the other ones, so I might even know the answer if I look down, but how are they being broken apart?
They're broken up by the liturgical season. So, you know, because this is a calendar that's main purpose is to depict sacred time, we break them up by that means. So Advent being a season is depicted together. The next is Christmas, so the 12 days of Christmas. We have one spread. Each of them, we call them spreads. One spread dedicated to just the 12 days of Christmas. And then the next two spreads are Epiphany and all the time after Epiphany. Now, we can only fit as many as 4 weeks on a single spread. And so some seasons will take multiple spreads. Easter takes two spreads. Lent takes two spreads. But when you see the frames and the imagery from one spread to another that's within the same season, it will be the same. You could even put them together on the wall if you wanted. So Advent has the wood to remind us. It's a penitential season to remind us of the cross. You know, you'll notice when you see Lent later on in volume two, it also has wood and it's kind of austere. So we shape the frame to remind you of what that season's about, as well as the imagery and all that.
Yeah, like every single aspect of this calendar has some meaning to it, it sounds like. I mean, I didn't know, like the wood, I wouldn't even have thought of that, but that's great. And so I assume the companion guide that you're creating will have information like that.
Yes.
Yes.
So that's a great thing for like the parents, because a lot of kids probably wouldn't pick that up, for the parents to show them and say, hey, notice this one has wood and the last one, you know, Easter has, you know, Lent had wood, but Easter has whatever Easter has, and talk about that. So that's pretty neat. Okay. So now you said volume two. Now, how is it? Now, I know I got volume one, which I think had three or four. I can't remember exactly what it was. So it has four. So it has Advent, Christmas, one Epiphany. Is it two Epiphanies then?
Mm-hmm. Epiphany, okay, part one and part two.
Okay. Part one and part two of Epiphany. So how is it that people get this? They get, you know, volume one, will, you know, a subscription. How does that work?
You can do it two ways. You can purchase it from Sophia if you want the physical calendars. You can get the subscription where you just pay $25 every quarter, and they'll send you automatically the next volume in time to put it up for that season. There'll be four volumes this year. We're hoping that as we do this year by year, we can trim that down. I'm hoping that in a future year, we might only be two or even just one, because it makes the shipping less expensive and they can make this, you know, easier to do. But or you could purchase just the volume itself. So Sophia has either option. If you want to just try it, for $30, you could buy just the spreads, just the posters for volume one. And if you like it, hop on the membership. It's a little cheaper. But we also have a digital membership. So Liturgy of the Home, our website, you can subscribe to the digital membership and you'll get a lot of other things around the calendars, like what the way we produce them. Each of the images are digitally stitched together. So the calendar is actually kind of like a tapestry, a digital tapestry. Well, each of those individual images are illustrated at a much larger size. And so we're able to make coloring pages out of them. We're able to use those images in different ways. You'll see in the companion booklet, you'll see each of the individual daily images. So we can use this imagery in multiple ways to really help reinforce what it's all about.
I'll put the links in the show notes. So basically, I'll put the link to Sophia where you can get the calendars, either subscription or just one volume. And then Liturgy of the Home is where people will be able to get the digital subscription to find out like everything they ever wanted to know about this.
And for everyone who gets the Sophia subscription, you get, I'll be sending out a coupon code if you get on our email list for, you get a big discount on the digital.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Okay. Is there anything else about this calendar that you want that I didn't bring up? I mean, cause I feel like there's probably like a billion things that I didn't bring up cause it has so much, but anything else that you want to like tell, particularly parents, like how to use the calendar? What are some practical ways that a parent could use the calendar in their family, like during Advent, for example?
Well, one of the things I wanted to note is that I try to put in cultural things, imagery that helps to tie to certain maybe lost or unknown traditions. So for example, I'll just make a note for the Advent calendar. If you notice on December 4th, there's a picture in the frame of a branch, of a bare branch in a little piece of water. And it says on it, the Barbara branch. Historically, this was the feast of St. Barbara. And so in a lot of European countries, traditionally they would go clip a branch, a bare branch, and put it into a vase of water on that day. And the hope was that it would bloom and blossom indoors on Christmas. Particularly it comes from Germany. Depending upon where you live, you can begin this tradition in your home where you could go any spring blossoming plant, if you take a clipping on December 4th and put it in a jar of water and let the kids watch to see if it will bloom for Christmas. The tradition goes back because it says St. Barbara was locked in a tower and there was a bare branch in her up there, and she supposedly moistened it with her tears and then it bloomed, I guess, on Christmas, and it brought her much joy. So there's just things like that children love. And so a mom might read about it but forget about it when the time came, but having the imagery lets the kids help to instigate stuff like that and say, Mom, what is that branch? Can we do that? And so that's why I try to put things in the calendar.
Yeah, I that's cool. I mean, if nothing else, you see that and you at least try to Google it and try to figure out.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
What the heck? I mean, I'd recommend the companion guide, but at the same time, you know, if you're just not sure. Have you guys done the Barbara branch at your house before?
No, but yeah, that's why I put in, because I want my kids to remind me to do it.
Very good.
Like come when we get to the end of Epiphany tide of that season, there's a picture of children bearing the Alleluia. And I've had a few different moms say from our last, we had it on the calendar last year, and there were several moms that said, I'm so grateful you put it there because we always forget to do the bearing of the Alleluia on the correct day. But because it was on the calendar, it's a reminder. So that's part of the reason why those are there as well.
And we've discovered so many things. Like I didn't know about the Barbara branch. This project is causing us to dig in and to research and to find these little treasures. You know, what are the things that Dom Guéranger or others have talked about within the liturgy? And as it's like we're picking low-hanging fruit in many ways as we rediscovering, you know, a record of what was used to be done, and we just integrate it into the calendar, and it's growing.
I also pull from like Maria von Trapp's around the year with the von Trapp family, and I'm still trying to collect resources of different Catholic traditions. It's been neat meeting some people that know a lot more than I do, so I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, and I think anybody who has this calendar is going to learn a heck of a lot. I feel like it's one of those things where it gives us so much information that many years, it's going to really be useful. Now, is the plan, like, for example, you might not even thought of this yet, but I just thought of it myself. Like, for example, next year, so Advent in 2022, obviously the days change because, you know, first Sunday Advent is a different day. Is the plan to have similar images, or do you guys think you'll be finding more stuff and maybe redo the images differently? What are you thinking on that?
Well, we're already, so we are calendars last year, but they were only available digitally. We hadn't worked with Sophia yet. So people were just printing them on their home printers. So from last year to this year, there's several changes. So for example, a saint whose feast day last year fell on a Sunday, now they're on the Monday.
Right. That's true.
So we are redrawing those particular images. And in doing so, we're building the library of images. And once we have all of them, it's a matter of digitally stitching them together properly for each year. So I won't be redrawing all the artwork, but every year there's going to be some amount of artwork that needs to be adjusted or redesigned, or there may be things we discover that we want to add in. So much of the imagery will be the same, but people that got last year's Advent, Christmas, Epiphany calendars will see that it's quite a bit different. But they'll also notice some of the same things that they saw before.
And we'll continue to improve the imagery. So she had to go very quickly on certain images. So she's going back and we're putting more shades of color on certain things and bringing more tone and sharpness. So, and there's a lot that shifts. Like the Lent calendar this year, there's some drawings on there that weren't there last year because of, like she mentioned, but the way the commemorations line up. So there's a lot of these little details that will change from year to year. Mm-hmm. This is just growing as we go. Yeah. I do want to find a way. She thinks we can't do it, but I want to find a way to make a reusable one, but it would have to look very different.
Right.
And I'm thinking that
Michaela's shaking her head.
It'd be so complicated. I don't know how we do that, but he's going to try. So if he comes up with it, oh, okay.
People have written us. So there's a demand for it.
Right.
But we'll see. But I think much of the same imagery could still go into it. But this is what we have right now.
So Michaela, you drew all of this, right? Everything on the calendar.
Kind of. It's a little so I do all the design work. I do it all in black and white. It gets transferred to watercolor paper, and my sister Rose paints it with a gouache. And then it gets rescanned back into the computer, and then I do any digital digitally I touch it up. So if there's any like little tweaks or things need to be darkened. And then when I'm finished, it goes to my other sister, Kateri, and she basically takes all the images that have been painted and she stitches it all together.
So it sounds like the whole thing is a very much a family affair. Lots of people involved, very artistic family as well, obviously. I admire that. My oldest daughter is an artist, but I am not. And so I very much admire those who can do things like that. And it came out beautifully, definitely. Okay, well, I think we're going to wrap it up here. I really appreciate the time you spent. I encourage everybody I just encourage every Catholic family to buy this Advent calendar. Even if you go to a parish that doesn't do the traditional calendar, I still think this calendar is very worthwhile because it at least tells you about the history. You know, this is the history of how the church celebrated these seasons. A lot of it's retained, but a lot of it's not, and just allows your kids to learn about that. So even if for just that reason alone, I would encourage you to get those calendars. So, but thank you very much, Jeremiah. Thank you, Michaela, and good luck, and everybody pray for Michaela, the baby that's going to be coming before too long, and that's exciting, and so you're going to be drawing in the waiting room, in the delivery room, maybe, but that's okay.
Probably.
Very good. Well, okay.
I'll be wearing the baby, and then she'll be drawing, and then we'll be having the baby back and forth.
That's right. Exactly. That there you go. Very good. So, okay. Well, God bless you guys and everybody else who watching, listening. Until next time, God love you.